the title of the talk, or the talk is about the heart in the Dharma, in the world of the Dharma. The world of the Dharma is the Buddhist teaching, and this day is a combination of the inspiration of Rumi and of the Buddhist path, which of course lead in the same direction. And for many of us that have been on retreats and have been on practice and have learned mindfulness, meditation, and so on, we may have an association that the spiritual path of the Dharma is a bit of a struggle. We deal with the stuff. The mind generates loads of issues. It's a big mess. We're all the time doing a Sisyphean work of cleaning the mind. It comes with thoughts of judgment, of criticism, of confusion, of anger. Emotions arise, and we have a sense that the Buddhist practice is a kind of a cleaning process, and partly it is, but only part. And a large part of the Buddhist practice is about the heart, and sometimes that's not expressed enough, and it's not explained, and it's not practiced enough. There is no doubt that in the Buddhist world there really isn't a difference between mind and heart. The Tibetan word for consciousness is heart-mind. One heart-mind, one thing. And all through the Dharma, the Buddhist world, the knowing is always connected to feeling. There you can't really separate the two, just like you can't in science. In the modern research on the brain, the affect, meaning the emotional world or the world of feeling, is always connected to every thought and every movement of the mind. So there's, in fact, the mind doesn't move without the heart asking it to move. Otherwise there's no, the mind doesn't move. The mind doesn't go there, or look for this, or say that, or think that. There isn't a mental action or a mental process that doesn't have the heart as the engine that drives it. In a very subtle way, just the attention is driven by feeling life. And it's like, you know, in the Bible, knowing, the dat, is sexual as much as it is consciousness. The two are together. It's Sarah, that's the famous ones. Abraham knew Sarah, nachon, yadat. The same word is making love and knowing, same word. So I want to explore two themes, one or two themes of love, examples of love in the Dharma, and the heart in the Dharma. And the first theme I want to explore is what drives us to seek release and liberation, and that is longing, kmeha. And kmeha is a movement of the heart. Kmeha is in a way what brought you here today. If you were sitting there either totally enlightened and in perfect absolute silence and peace, no reason to go anywhere. Or if you prefer watching football on television, your kmeha is to football and not to here. But the longing is a very deep movement of the heart. And it's the heart telling us. And it's partly because we know underneath pain or dissatisfaction, non-satisfaction, isipuk. We know each human being and each animal and each creature born into this body, into this world, knows isipuk. Because sipuk happens for a short time and then it's followed by easy book. Happiness is followed by sadness, misery, suffering. So we all know that. And so there's something very deep down. Our response to that is to look for a place which is beyond. And in, I think in almost every human being it's there. But it sometimes goes in very strange ways, like football. On Shabbat on television. But we have it in us somewhere, deep down, deep in the deepest place in us, we have a memory of perfection, of Shleimut. We have it in us. If we didn't have in us some deep, deep understanding of perfection, we wouldn't have the longing to be anywhere. We wouldn't have anywhere to go. We wouldn't have any idea that there's something that we can do. We'd be locked completely into a limited world. And the longing, the kmeha, is telling us that we have in us somewhere that we do know deep down perfection. And so all longing is actually longing to come home. Every longing is longing for home in the end, is longing to be in the end where we already are. Because we are there, but it's often so buried and so covered by the pains of life that we don't notice it, we ignore it. And so longing is a very, very beautiful and important movement for us. And in the Buddhist world, it is very precious. Now, you may think, well, the longing is about desire, for desire. And the Buddha said desire is a problem. It's one of the three poisons. And it creates conditioning. And desire is not helpful. But the Buddha also said that the one desire that's really, really helpful is longing for liberation. And at a certain time, like everything, the Buddha said very simply, there's no problem with desire if it's helpful for you to liberate. But then when you get there, you don't need the desire anymore. Mm-hmm. If you have a desire for going to the park, as soon as you got in the park, the desire stops. So in any way, the desire is temporary. So don't worry about it. He said, desire for liberation, go for it. And we don't want to get into extremes. All desire is bad. The Dharma is much more subtle than that. It's a huge teaching, and so it tells you in the teaching what is helpful and what feeds you and what feeds the spirit. And what feeds suffering? There's a lot, that's basically all the practice. What is feeding freedom and what is feeding suffering? And what is feeding freedom is this love in our hearts for liberation, for perfection, for coming home deeply, for relief from the pain and difficulty of being kind of dumped in samsara. That nobody asked us. Just dumped in samsara, in the wheel. And we're like a hamster going around, or gear, inside the wheel of samsara. And nobody asked us. We just keep going. And so of course we want release from that. And it releases them. And it's release from contraction. And in the Kabbalah is a lot, and I won't go into that now, but Tzimtzum in the Kabbalah is the same. Contraction. And the Buddhist teaching is the same. That we experience ordinary life, we experience samsara as contraction. And from this contracted place, we cry for expansion, for liberation. That all the movement of awakening is one of dropping boundaries and imprisonment, that the walls and the doors open. It's not about just discovering things. It's a sense of dropping the boundaries and dropping the things that hold us in prison. And they're things in our own mind, of course. They're not anything other than boundaries that we are habits, we have as habits. But it's all about dropping the boundaries and releasing and expanding. And, you know, you can feel it in every way you want, every example that you want to think. I mean, just a small example, which I'll talk about in a minute. Our boundary between self and other. How, if we let it grow, we are forever distant from each other. And we have other. And there is othering. And then there's me. And then there's an other. And we keep working on this, and the other becomes further and further away. And then we don't like them, we don't like our neighbours, we don't like the Palestinians, or we don't like the Americans, or we don't like the Israelis, or we don't like the whatever, you know, our it's there's just a small example. And then breaking boundaries means there is no other. Other is us. We just include and include and include, and we expand and we expand, and so the boundaries fall, and the boundaries fall, and the contracted place of Tzimtzum is expanded, and then there is no other. And that other gets less and less and less. So there's the movement, just a small example of awakening through what we really hunger for. So devotion is about dvekut, devotion in the Dharma is about this longing for liberation, and it's expressed in so many ways. It's expressed, for example, in the refuges. Refuges are sort of a fundamental statement of where I'm practicing in the Buddhist path. I take the Buddha as refuge. I take the Dharma as refuge. I take the Sangha as refuge. Refuge is miflat or miklat, machaseh, and and also by it, and also hitchayobut, commitment. It's all wrapped in that same one word. I take the Buddha as refuge, as commitment, as home, as safety, as protection, is a statement of belonging to the Buddhist path. But more than that, the Buddha in this, the word Buddha means consciousness. That's what it is. It's consciousness. It's not a person. So in other words, I take consciousness as my home, I take awareness as my home, I take the perfection in me as home. And it's a very beautiful, but we do it again and again because it expresses the longing, it expresses I am moving towards, I am going towards, I am committed to the perfection, the perfect awareness. Consciousness, awareness is better than consciousness, as home. Or I take the truth, the Dharma, as home. Or I take belonging, the Sangha, the community, as home, as place of liberation. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll ask at the end. Do you mind? Because I'll keep going. Because also I'm recording it, and then if that's okay with you. Yeah. So, there's a quote from someone I read who said, it's a guy who was actually just starting to practice, and he said, I discovered all my life I waited for real life to begin, if not for all the obstacles and problems. And then I realized that the obstacles and problems are my real life. In other words, just the movement in us, the love in us for the liberation is including shifting the view. We shift the view to what is really happening. We shift the view. In the mythology, all mythology in a way is about it. If you look underneath nearly every myth, it's about coming home, it's about the journey, it's about the odyssey, it's the journey to find ourselves, it's a journey to come back to perfection, it's the journey, it is all the effort, it's the where we find our obstacles. In the mythology, we embrace the ugly, the demon, the frog, the ugly old woman that turns, that we kiss and turns into the princess, and the frog that turns into the prince, and the demon that turns into the child or the queen. And it's all that we touch, we are through, we if we keep going on this journey, we meet the difficulty and the obstacles, and they turn into our liberation, our beauty, our perfection. But we have to keep going. So the second area that I want to talk about is love itself. Is what the love is in the Buddhist world, how the Buddhist world relates to love. And as I said, the loving and seeing are one. They are joined together. You can't be mindful without love. And you can't be loving without mindfulness, awareness. The two are always linked. I was thinking about this talk yesterday when I was playing with my grandchildren. And actually I came yesterday, I met with Elia, and I was telling her about the day, and she said, "Oh, you should talk about your grandchildren." And what it was yesterday morning I had like 5 hours with more grandchildren than I usually am used to. I'm used to taking them one or two at a time, but I had three or four of them at one go, and I was on my own. So I felt like a gunan. And I thought about this awareness with love, and I was really thinking how to prevent jealousy and one playing with one and then the other one saying I want and so on, how to kind of work with the, and I decided that I had to be there with every thought of these small children, like with every moment of the movement before it became jealousy, kina, I want, why are you playing, you know, I had to jump in there with some change, you know, some movement. And and I was talking about it with Eli yesterday, and I see the way in me at that moment the mind and the heart were together. I was really trying, and it was so quiet, it was so amazing. 5 hours, it was so, we were so quiet together, like a kind of a nest. It was like a nest. And when the moment came for something, one needed a drink, it was. And it really reminded me of a sutta, a text, a Buddhist text, where the Buddha met three monks that were living together in the forest. And he said, "How do you live together?" And they said, "We're very quiet. Now and then we talk Dharma with each other. But we never need to ask each other anything. Because as soon as someone wants something or needs something, we just know it and we help them. As soon as, just before they need to say it, we're already there with what's needed. Whether it's cleaning up or whether it's providing food or whether it's helping. And the main thing we do is we look at each other with kind eyes." Mm. We are like different bodies but one mind that is mixed like milk and water. And we look at each other with kind eyes. And it's a beautiful example of heart and mind joined together. And that's the love. And our problems with it are that we are always, because not because of anything we did, but because of the conditioning, hatnaya, the pain of samsara, our love also is has boundaries. And therefore, we find ourselves, our love, limited, and that's painful to us. We have warmth and kindness for somebody, but then it's limited if they don't give it back. If we were giving kind to somebody and we get there in the family, whatever, and we don't get it back, our love is dried up, dries up, and our warmth is stopped by someone that doesn't share it. Our love is limited by control. We will love our family, our daughter or son, but if they don't do what we say, then something, is mezohem. Our love is contaminated by expectations. If someone doesn't do what we want them to do, go off and become a meditator in India, and I wanted them to be a doctor or a Roy Cheshbon. Our forgiveness, our sense of is limited if people do it again, or our compassion is limited only a certain person, or if we are okay, we can be compassionate, but if we ourselves feel down, we can't be compassionate on someone else. So everything, all the time, it's being limited. We feel a gratitude, hakarat todah, but only for what you gave me, not just by itself, stam lishma. So we always find the emotions are limited, or into something coming back, or something, some conditions, or some boundaries. There's this phrase in the Talmud, I think, of aniyim ircha kodmim, and that just tells you it's limited, ircha. But if you can think of ircha as being the whole planet, then it's not limited. Then everyone is kodmim. So, but it just shows you that it's just an example of limitation. But at the same time, it also points to you that we do have those powers of love in us, and of compassion, and of kind eyes. And then we're faced with a boundary. They get here, and that's as far as they get. And the practice in the Dharma is to keep expanding that boundary. L'archiv, 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 kol hazman. And one of the ways that it's done is by just being with the vibration of love. The retet, the quality of love, without worrying about an address, a katovet, without any, just letting our heart vibrate. So compassion, for example, is defined in the Buddhist world as the vibration of the heart when faced with the suffering of somebody else. And in the early Buddhist teaching, I will read it here, that again and again love is talked about, but it's practiced in a very specific way, which is just vibration, just energy of love. When you are when there is no greed or negativity, or you're not confused and you're mindful, then you stay, spreading 1/4 of the 360 malot, 1/4, with a mind full of loving kindness. Just spread the loving mind 1/4, then another quarter, then another quarter, then another quarter, and then up, and then down, and to yourself as to everywhere else. You stay, dwell, shehiya, shehot, lishot, Because it's important, because it's not just a moment, it's dwelling in it, it's really staying, you're really staying in it, spreading, pervading, spreading the entire world with a mind full of loving kindness, which is vast, is huge, anak, exalted, meaning hitromem, lamala.
Nisgav.
Without measure, without any negativity, just as someone that is blowing a conch shell, you know, been to India, conch is a sacred, like a sacred, it's a shell that makes a strong sound. Just like a blower of a conch shell can send his signal to all the four quarters of the world, so that liberation of mind developed by loving kindness and cultivated in this way, it does away with all limitations are gone. So it's very much spreading love everywhere, and it's a practice. In other words, it's recognized that in addition to the meditation practice we do, we can practice the spreading of love everywhere. The meditation by itself does work in the same way. Just mindfulness does work, because if we are quiet, paying attention to the breath, close to ourselves, close to life, close to the sounds of the birds, close to the tree, we're mindful and aware, love arises by itself. It must do. Because we are intimate, right? We have intimate. We are intimate with the breath, with ourselves, doesn't matter with what. Just that is enough. It's love and knowing together. And it does work. And you see it, for example, in the Vipassana community. How many people, I mean, it must have been 500 times people have come to me and said, I need to do something in my life to help others. And I realize it from going on retreat. And we don't say to retreat, you must help others. It comes naturally when people go on retreat and they meet themselves, they feel themselves, they feel the world, and love arises by itself in a very natural way. Sympathy, empathy. It comes without any effort, just by being mindful, aware, and calm, and quiet, and seeing. Through the seeing, loving happens. But you can also develop it. And the Buddha said, it's good to develop it as well. So the seeing and the development of love go together. When we meet our suffering too, when we meet the pain, even the pain of the body, meet pain and difficulty honestly, straight, something in there, instead of running away from difficulty, instead of closing it off or escaping, we turn towards the difficulty and something there opens for us. It's like a broken heart is not broken, it's broken open. The broken heart is broken open. If we're really with it, the heart breaks open. Sadness of life, if we're really with it, breaks us open. We look at other people differently. We look at ourselves differently. Anything, in any difficulty that we really face, something in us becomes bigger. We face, we sit with it, we are with it, we close to it, we intimate with it, at home with it. The Buddha said, love is God. God is love. That's interesting, because he didn't use the word God in any other context, but he used the word God in the context of love. And he didn't use the word God, he used the word Brahma, of course. And Brahma is the Indian deity, or the ultimate Indian deity, the God above. above all the other gods. And he said that love brings you to the Brahma world. Love is belongs to the god world, the Brahma world. The Brahma world is the world of love. And the movements of love are described in the Buddhist world as the houses of the gods, Brahma Viharas. So that's what they're called. The four Brahma Viharas are the four forms or the four flavors of unlimited love. And they're called the places where God dwells, or Brahma dwells. Vihara is a, maybe if you've been to India, you know Vihara is a dwelling place, or a hotel, a sort of traditional, like, Vihara is a place to dwell. So the dwelling place of the gods is the love. And in a way, it's given a very, very high importance, the unconditional love. The Buddha once said, it's very, very good to lead a moral life, but not as good as real meditation practice. It's very, very good to practice meditation, but not as good as one instant of unconditional love. And unconditional love here means total love without boundaries, love without restriction. I remember on a retreat in Kibbutz Inbar many years ago, there was a woman with advanced cancer, and it was a retreat on love, on metta. Metta is love, loving kindness. And we were practicing metta for 1 week. And the practice of love is not always easy. And the reason is that we meet the boundaries of our love when we meet love. And very often it comes out, for example, as anger or as resistance. And the image that we have is when you drop cold water on a hot plate, it goes psh, and another drop goes psh, and it's reactive. So practice with love can create reaction, reactivity. But gradually the hot plate is cooled, and then it's much easier. Anyway, she said, after a few days, she said, having a terrible time. She was, she knew she was soon to die. She was sitting with the oxygen cylinder next to her. And I was asking her, we're talking to her, how, you know, what's happening for her. And she said, it's really, I'm so full of anger and rage, and I'm against the disease, and I'm against the doctors, and I'm against my situation, and I'm against life that did it to me, and I'm against... But as she was saying it, her face was smiling. And I knew that wasn't the whole story. And I said, yeah, and? And? And she said, yeah. I came out one morning and I stood on the path above Kibbutz Inbar, it's like on a hill, and I watched the valleys, and I had one moment of this absolute unconditional love where I just felt in absolute love and dissolved in the whole of reality. It was just a few minutes, but for me, I can die happy. So, the Brahma Viharas, the four, there are four of them, and the basis is love, metta, which metta is loving kindness in the Pali language, which is practice, but partly by knowing how we are all together, by a sense of similarity. If we know that you also want to be happy, and I want to be happy, and you don't want to die, and I don't want to die, and you like things, and I like things, and not like things, and we are struggling with life in the same way, and we both experience suffering, and so on. This sense of underneath similarity between people makes us join together, because we feel we're in the same boat. And that's a way which, in which it's an understanding with which we start the practice, that we're all in the same boat. A little bit, I hope, this afternoon we'll practice that. It's from there, the sense of joining with each other, and from the joining, again, just like I mentioned before, we find love. We find we can't join with each other in a neutral way, like a machine. Always there is bracha happening. When we join and we feel other people, there's a bracha, there's a blessing, there's brachot, there's a wish for something. A wish for something, but a wish for each other to be happy, a wish for each other we want, like ourselves, we want to be happy. A wish for each other to find that perfection in them. We just wish it, because we know that they're like us. And that's how we practice metta, we practice love. Sometimes we feel the other person suffering, and that makes us wish that their suffering finishes, and that's compassion. When we really feel the other person, feel their suffering, we take it on a little bit on ourselves, and the bracha, the blessing comes. I wish you would get out of your difficulty right now. And that's the movement of compassion. But we also have the movement of joy, and that's one of the elements of the Brahma Viharas, because we can't really love only on the basis of suffering and difficulty. There must be joy in love. Love and joy are very close. Love is not miserable. When we love someone, we want to make them happy. So we can only make them happy if we are happy. So we spread joy to others as an act of love. The love and the joy are very close. We want others to be happy. We are happy and we want others to be happy. So there is an element of joy in the love as well. And there's an element of space. Equanimity, the fourth of the Brahma Viharas. Equanimity or steadiness of space. And there's an image in the Buddhist tradition about this, that the teaching is like the moon that's going across the empty sky. And the moon is shining its light on everyone equally. There is no one that doesn't receive the blessing of the moon. But the moon is in space. The moon needs to be fully present and separate and clear and to give space. And giving space and allowing things to be what they are is the fourth of the Brahma Viharas, the godly worlds. Allowing things to be as they are. And being with them as they are. Being with them, fully with them as life is. Giving it space, like how much it's important, for example, in relationships. You can think of this sometimes, the kind of, the soup, the marak of family relationships where we don't give each other space. We're full of interference, expectations, control, disturbance, nervousness, or whatever, jealousy, million different things that we don't give the other space to be what they are. And this, so the fourth is the sense of allowing things to be what they are. It's also in the heart, actually. It's a heart appreciation of the way things as they are. Let things be as they are. Let this person grow in this, give space to this person to be as they are, to grow as it wants. Let the flowers and the trees outside to grow as they need to grow. So that's equanimity, the steadiness. As flowing waters disappear into the mist and we lose all track of their passage, every heart is its own Buddha. Let go. Become immortal. Wake up. The world's a bit of dust. Look at the round mirror of the heavens. Turn loose, let go, slip past shapes and shadows, sit side by side with nothing. It's a Zen poem. As flowing waters disappear into the mist, we lose all track of their passage. Every heart is its own Buddha. Let go. Become immortal. Wake up. The world's just a piece of dust. Look at heaven's mirror, the round mirror of heaven. Turn loose. Slip past shapes and shadows. Sit side by side with nothing. So the importance, and just final comment, the next Buddha is meant to be the Buddha of love, Maitreya, from metta, same word as metta. And there is a sense that I don't want to go into predictions, I don't want to go into what's happening and what will happen and what has happened, and but there is a sense that in the among the Dharma community, the Buddhist community, that this is the time when more than any other time we need love, and the world is in such a hard place, crisis, anxiety, limitation, struggle, conflict, and you can really feel that the element, especially after hundreds of years of, you know, this objective, scientific, mechanical view of reality, material view of reality, that the love is the melting, it will melt it. And that's really, if all the range of practices and offerings that the Buddhist world has, this feels to be the time when love is needed more than any other practice, more than anything else. And that's why I think the next Buddha is called the Buddha Maitreya. Is regarded as the Buddha. The predictions are that the next Buddha will be Buddha Maitreya, which is the Buddha of love, because it's really needed. Well, thank you. So let's just take a moment to sit quietly and just reflect on that.